Hey, I'm Olivia Darbo. This is number 0402, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0402. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Karen Roost, a former celebrity talent agent who has a plan for you to become purposely famous.
I think everybody should be famous. I'll just put it out there. I know fame gets a bad rap, but I'm here to give it a good one. Fame really just means you're visible. People know who you are. You have a certain amount of respect and authority, and you make more money as well. Who doesn't want that? But I'm saying in the end, use it for a good purpose. Make the world a better place, contribute to humanity, and get the proper help to do that.
Psychologist John Huber is back on to talk about a recent study linking the connection between social media and depression.
This is a preliminary study, so at this point, we don't know if it is actually causal or if people who are predisposed to depression fall into this category. So we're waiting for more studies to follow up and repeat the experiments and cover some other variables. But regardless, the research out there shows in other studies that people who spend a lot of time on social media, in fact, based on the number of apps that they use, if they have seven or more apps, they're three times more likely to be clinically depressed than people using less than three apps.
Ernie Smith from Tedium is back on to talk about lickable adhesive stamps.
Recently, I had to mail a gift to somebody. In that process, I had to go get a gift card, I had to sign it, and I had to put the envelope in. And in the process of actually doing this, I ended up licking the envelope, which I hadn't done in a while, and it like got me thinking, why is this still a thing? Why are we still doing this? From there, clearly, I decided I needed to research why envelopes and why the mail system is so addicted to us licking things.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0402 was Olivia Darbo. Actress, singer, songwriter. You may remember her as Karen Arnold on The Wonder Years. She was also a little creepier as serial killer Nicole Wallace on Law & Order Criminal Intent. And by the way, it's also kind of creepy to think that Karen Arnold grew up to be Nicole Wallace. By the way, she's also half of the excellent weekly podcast entitled Every Friday with Dan and Olivia. She co-hosts it with some guy named Dan. And by the way, I have to mention, as a caveat to all of this, that she is much nicer and much sweeter than Nicole Wallace, okay? I just want to say that right now. That's just a role she plays, not the woman she is. By the way, if she were the character she played and not the woman she is, then Dan might have something to worry about. I'm just saying. Thank you very much, Olivia, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio program that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And I'm going to say it one more time. Listen to Every Friday with Dan and Olivia. It is a fun show. And again, thanks again, Olivia. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, back in the day when I hosted an open-line radio show, we once did a fun topic where we asked the hypothetical question of what would you save from your house if it were on fire? And, of course, we eliminated the obvious, like people and pets. We're talking just basically, you know, possessions. Well, we got a lot of interesting answers, but never this one from a current story that's in the news. One South Dakota man was faced with just such a decision, and he chose beer. And he was put in jail for it, too. Sioux Falls police said that they have arrested 56-year-old Michael Castile after he obstructed the work of firefighters. According to the police investigation, after a fire broke out in Castile's building, firefighters and police were evacuating and treating the wounded. That is when Castile insisted on going back into his apartment to get some beer. Firefighters told him that he cannot enter the building as it was too dangerous. Castile pushed police officers aside and entered the building. A few minutes later, he emerged from the building with two cans of beer. But Castile did not get a chance to drink his beer as he was immediately arrested by police. The Sioux Falls Police Department wrote on Twitter, "This incredibly poor judgment could have put many responders at risk. It is not advisable to push past police and firefighters in an attempt to save your beer." Castile has been charged with one count of obstructing a firefighter or law enforcement officer. His bail has been set at $300. And to add insult to injury, the beer he went back into the burning building to rescue? Bud Ice. Gee. I wonder if he's going to get an endorsement deal from the folks at Bud Ice. It's not like Bud Ice has a lot of people lining up to endorse it currently, unless you're including penguins. You know, there are some people who can really hold a grudge. This next story pretty much proves that. Police in Oklahoma say a woman flew into a rage upon seeing her boyfriend's lover at a funeral home during a ceremony. 25-year-old Shayna Lauren Sims is then alleged to have cut body parts from the 38-year-old woman. Fortunately for the victim, she was deceased. According to the police investigation, the 38-year-old victim, who dated the suspect's boyfriend, died of natural causes. Are they sure about that, by the way? Anyway, died of natural causes. Now, during the funeral, the victim's family members noticed that the body had been vandalized and the body had numerous cuts. Hair had been missing and body parts were missing, including the woman's breasts. Police were called to the scene and family members told police that they saw Sims standing next to the casket with her hands inside. When police arrested Sims, she was in possession of a knife that contained traces of the victim's hair. Sims was also charged with vandalizing a corpse, burglary, and illegal dissection. Her bail has been set at $20,000. Wow, the words of 17th century English playwright William Congreve comes to mind. "Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." Apparently, that's a grave understatement. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, here's a quote from a 12-year-old girl. "I thought, wait, what's this word? I never heard of it. Is it something I shouldn't know?" That's what 12-year-old Frances Haybeck wondered. She's a sixth grader at Trinity Lutheran School in Racine, Wisconsin. The word, dildo. And Principal Pamela Amling of the church-run school accused her, in front of classmates, of selling them to other students and suspended her. What she was actually selling is a toy, water snake wigglies. And the girl had permission from a teacher to sell water snake wigglies for a church fundraiser. Her father, Milt Haybeck, is demanding the school apologize for the public shaming of his daughter and their accusation that she was selling sex toys. The school did backpedal, saying media accounts are inaccurate as to what happened. "We have never asserted that a water snake toy is a sex toy," said the school's pastor, Reverend David Gein. "That's an incredible lie," retorts the girl's father. "And where did Francis discover the toy, innocent or not?" "At the church's Sunday school. Someone gave one to an autistic boy to calm him." Well, you know, in this MacGyver world we now live in, just about anything can be a sex toy if you're brave enough. Also, I'm now kinda curious as to what is in that school principal's nightstand drawer. Yeah, very curious. Anyway, Let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Until she burned out, Karen Roost jetted around the world with such celebrities as Pitbull, Britney Spears, Macklemore, and others, whose names she is forbidden from mentioning. She negotiated million-dollar contracts with top Hollywood managers and lawyers, catered to their crazy whims, and once found herself walking into a room full of cash. Those heady days are behind her, and to talk about them and what she's doing now, Karen joins us on the line via Skype from Mexico City. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. You are now doing kind of the opposite by helping people to be purposely famous.
Purposely famous, correct.
Explain purposely famous.
Yes, well, first of all, I do want to say thank you for having me. And just for anybody of your listeners, if they want to go to my website, purposelyfamous.com, I have a very fun quiz that people can take to assess their potential to be famous for a good purpose. And that's really kind of what I've summed up all the different things that I've done in my life. I mean, I think everybody should be famous. I'll just put it out there. I know fame gets a bad rap, but I'm here to give it a good one. And fame really just means you're visible. People know who you are. You have a certain amount of respect and authority, and you make more money as well. Who doesn't want that? But I'm saying in the end, use it for a good purpose. Make the world a better place, contribute to humanity, and get the proper help to do that.
Now, when I mentioned some of the celebrities in the introduction, I mentioned people like Pitbull, Britney Spears, Macklemore. These are people with talents. It's one thing when you have talent, and therefore your talent makes you famous. You say that there's nothing wrong with being famous, but what about people who are famous just for being famous?
People are famous. Well, first of all, there's many different ways to be famous. So if you're an entertainer like that, yes, it's for a talent. But I've worked with people who are famous just for sharing their wisdom, thought leaders. I've worked with highly paid TED Talk speakers, people who just have a really amazing concept or idea to share that becomes popular, and they get paid a lot of money for it. They change a lot of lives. And so there's a lot of different ways. And really, anybody can achieve this certain amount of notoriety. Sometimes it's based off your personal story. Sometimes it's based off what you've done. So I just hope people never feel limited on what they can do. Everybody has a good reason for being here. No one is born by accident. I really believe that. And you can, you know, use it to help other people.
Okay, well, let me throw a name out, for instance. The Kardashians.
Yeah.
there is a case of someone who's famous merely for being famous. And I'm not going to pick on her specifically, so let's go down the line to, for instance, other reality type shows.
Well, first of all, there's a difference between getting exposure and having influence. So getting exposure might be being on a TV show, like the Kardashians have, reality TV show. Right. It's actually a very good way just for people to see you. You're going to gain a certain amount of credibility just because you're seen. Now, if you want to use that for, you know, to make a good influence or make a bigger impact, you could use that as a platform to talk about your charitable causes or just some message that helps improve people's lives. Unfortunately, not all celebrities do that. A lot of them are doing that more and more, which I think is fantastic. But again, you know, no matter where you're from, you can do this as well, because the biggest thing that I've learned from working with so many famous people over the years, and this is not just, you know, three or five people, it's being behind the scenes with literally hundreds of people in the spotlight, is that they're really just normal people like you and me. They have bad breath in the morning, they have bad hair days, and they get angry and grumpy just like everybody else. But they put themselves out there, they take that risk, and it's definitely worth it for the rewards and ultimately for you to feel like you're living up to your fullest potential and that you're using everything you've got to make the most of your life and create a legacy.
Okay, so you worked for years as a celebrity talent agent, and I've dealt with celebrity talent agents because just by what I do, you can and sometimes are the gatekeeper to keep me away from people I might want to talk to. So that therein brings in a question: how do you guide a client towards where you like them to go or where you like them to be and away from what they shouldn't be doing?
Yes. Well, first of all, you need a system to follow. And if you do not know what celebrities have done to get to that highest level where they've reached now, or it's just someone influential or someone that you admire, you're totally missing out. It's like applying for a job at a company you've never done research for, or taking a test that you've never studied for. You know, this is your life. We are here to make the most of it. Right now, as I know, I have at least one life. I want to make the most of it. So do your research and follow the proven system. And then you've got to take what they've done and then make it your own. You've got to carve your own path. You've got to adapt what, you know, you've learned from them to where you're at in your life. And I think the mistake that a lot of people make is they follow these, inspirational people, and then they try and do exactly what they did. And if you can't be Bill Gates, the world philanthropist today, if you're still struggling to pay your bills, or you're, you know, don't know what you're going to do yet, you've got to take a step back and really look at where you're at and start from the beginning, get clarity on where you want to go and move up from there.
Is this what you're trying to get through to people? For instance, when they go to your website, Purposely Famous, and they answer that quiz, is that part of what you're trying to get people to understand about themselves?
Yes, absolutely. There's a bunch of different messages in there and good tips and strategies in that quiz. But I want people to really think bigger. And it is about being okay with being visible, making more money. There's definitely not a shortage of money in the world, but there is a shortage of people that stand up and know how to get it. Because we applaud people that are very wealthy, and I applaud them too. Great. But they've put in their time. They've learned how to negotiate. They've learned how to, you know, ask for that raise. And that these are all skills that can be learned. And that's one thing as a talent agent that I learned. There are opportunities around us everywhere. But, you know, if you're not born knowing it, which most people are not, you can learn it. So learn from the best.
As I mentioned in the introduction, I said that you were doing this kind of job until you got burnt out. You were traveling around the world. What was the breaking point, or is it a breaking point or an aha moment for you where you decided to change course?
Oh, to be honest, I mean, Britney Spears was one of the last, or was one of the biggest concerts that I did at that time. That was kind of a breaking point. This was a while ago. And I was in the middle of all this massive luxury. And I have to say, too, it was one of the best weeks of my life because, you know, I grew up on a farm in Idaho. So I'm privy to this kind of celebrity world at all. But I was there in the midst of all this extreme luxury. I mean, 5-star hotels, private jets, everything you want. And I was not happy. And I thought, oh, man, I've got to do something else to find my own purpose. Because if this is seemingly what we strive for, why not? You know, money, luxury, connections, all that stuff, and I'm not happy, there's something out there bigger for myself and for other people as well. So I went to this monastery, and I ordained as a nun, and I stayed for the whole year in silence. And that did it. That helped me regain my purpose.
That's quite the juxtaposition of personalities from the life you were leading to a year of silence. I don't know if I could do that. I just don't think that's possible.
I don't know I could do it either. I'd never sat still for 2 seconds in my life. But, you know, sometimes when you got to go extreme measures to find something deeper.
What was the toughest part of that for you? Was it the first few weeks, the first few months?
You know, it was the full year. The first 6 months was like a living hell, I'll be honest. Living hell. We had to wake up every day at 3:30 in the morning. We were only allowed to sleep 4 hours at night, eat 2 meals a day, in the morning as well. But the worst part was my head. I thought I was crazy. I wanted to be out. I wanted to be in. I was living in the past. But the last 6 months, it flew by. It absolutely flew by. I didn't want to leave. But the thing is, nothing in my environment that whole year ever changed. So I really realized the power of the mind. And also when I look back, you know, working with celebrities, you have to be, you know, mentally together, or else you do end up in a place like rehab or you know, kind of falling off the rocker. So the mind is more powerful than we think, but you also need to be strategic. You need, you know, certain business skills. You have to be savvy. There's a lot of different moving parts of this puzzle to live a fantastic life. And that's what I focus on helping people put together now.
Do people who you used to deal with, the Pitbulls, Britney Spears, and Macklemores of the world, if they come in contact with you now, do they see a different Karen Roos than the one they used to work with?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got thrown into this, very young and naive. And I used to be, just working, 800 hours a week. I was not the best boss. I was not the best person, to be honest. I just wanted to get the work done. And I wasn't very, purpose focused. So now I really care about the people and how they're feeling and, the relationships. And that's, I always make time to appreciate that. And I think like people like Pitbull, when I was with him, he's like the nicest person in the world. And to make it long term, you have to be like that to a point, because no one wants to be around someone that's grumpy all the time. And unfortunately it happens, but for those that really last, there's a point where you have to start appreciating who you are and what you're doing.
It sounds like you've gone from working as a celebrity talent agent to someone who could teach a few of these celebrities a thing or two as well. I'm not saying that in a negative kind of way, just for their own well-being and longevity, that you could be of great value to them, more so now, to teach them to, for lack of a better term, enjoy the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody needs someone in their life that can be that kind of third eye or that third person observer to say, hey, look, what is going on? And yeah, you're doing this great, but this area, you could improve a little bit, mentorship or coaching or whatever it is, always find someone that can help be really honest with you and tell you the truth and guide you along your way. We can't get to where we're going to go without that, to be honest. All the most successful people in the world get help like that. They have some kind of mentor.
I suggest people go to your website and at the very least fill out that questionnaire. And I thank you very, very much, Karen, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Karen Roost. Again, you can check out her website at purposelyfamous.com and fill out the questionnaire. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the page for this show, which is show number 0402, and you'll find links to both of Karen's sites. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. On the air on stations in Singapore, New Zealand, and America, and streaming through your computer. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll check into the link between social media and depression. Plus, Ernie Smith from Tedium is back on the program. He has the history of lickable adhesive stamps. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more stuff here on a program that is also heard on patreon.com, and you can become a patron of the program. This is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, right after the bagpipes, probably the most romantic musical instrument out there is the xylophone. But for some odd reason, some people just aren't sharing the love. So it's not too surprising that a Florida woman attacked her boyfriend when he refused to stop playing a xylophone. According to investigators, 43-year-old April Encarnacion was arrested on a domestic battery charge after police responded to a 911 call in Fort Walton Beach. Police say April was in the kitchen with the male victim, who was playing a xylophone at around 9:20 p.m. When April asked him to stop, the man refused. That is when April dumped a pot of cold cooking grease on him, according to a court filing. April is being held in lieu of $3,000 bond. Seriously, is romance now dead? Is it? Is it? Well, someone flagged down patrolling police officers in Panama City Beach, Florida, to report they found two children aged 2 and 3 alone in a parked pickup truck. The children were screaming, and officers also noticed marijuana and paraphernalia in several locations inside of the truck. The kids had been there for at least 30 minutes, witnesses said, and no one had come to check on them. Police found the children's mother and grandmother in a nearby parlor getting tattoos. 45-year-old Shannon Farrow Anderson and 21-year-old Hannah Ashlyn Anderson were charged with 2 counts of child neglect and 1 count each of possessing marijuana and paraphernalia. And may their incomplete tattoos forever remind them of their incomplete parenting skills. Well, it was easy to catch 31-year-old Crystal C. Golden of Lehigh Acres, Florida, who is now charged with grand theft. The clerk at a grocery store in Naples, Florida, was allegedly pocketing lottery tickets, more than 34,000 of them, at $1 each, and was caught because just about the entire store is being watched by security cameras. Golden allegedly admitted to the thefts, though the report didn't specify exactly what sort of lottery tickets they were. I suspect she'll be doing more sniffing than scratching in the near future. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, during their screening process to be foster parents, Derek and Francis Bears told the Children's Aid Society of Hamilton, Ontario, that they wouldn't lie to foster children in their care about anything. The couple doesn't celebrate Halloween, and they do not endorse Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny, as they do not wish to lie to children. They passed screening and training, and 2 sisters aged 3 and 4 were placed in their care. Later, according to a lawsuit, their placement support worker told them it was part of their duty as foster parents to teach the girls about the Easter Bunny because it is ostensibly part of Canadian culture. The Bears said they wouldn't directly challenge the girls' beliefs, but wouldn't lie either. They offered to have a chocolate egg hunt and buy the girls new dresses, or to allow them to spend Easter weekend at another foster home. The CAS's response, they say, was they must tell the foster girls that the Easter Bunny was real, or their foster home would be closed. 3 weeks before Easter, it was, and the girls were removed. The couple sued, alleging CAS violated their religious rights. "We're not looking for money," Derek said. "We just don't want them to do to others what they did to us." Hamilton CAS Executive Director Dominic Verticchio said he couldn't speak about a current active case, but did talk generally. "I think there should be a balance between being respectful of a foster parent's beliefs and also the kids," he said. "You've got to find a middle ground." Lies, bad. Complete truth, bad. Half-truths, okay. See? Middle ground. By the way, I didn't see anything in the story about Derek and Francis's concerns or thoughts on the Tooth Fairy or the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I digress. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There might be some irony in the fact that social media might not be all that social. In fact, it might be the cause of more loneliness and depression. One study on the mood of social media users conducted by the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine last year showed that the more time young people and young adults spent on social media, the more likely they are to be depressed. To talk about this, we are joined once again by clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization, and he joins us on the line from Texas. Hi, John.
Hi, Peter. How you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks once again for being on the program with us.
No worries.
The issue of social media causing depression and more loneliness, to be honest, quite frankly, is not that surprising to me. Was it surprising to you?
It's not surprising to me. However, you know, this is a preliminary study. So at this point, we don't know if it is actually causal or if people who are predisposed to this to depression fall into this category. So we're waiting for more studies to follow up and repeat the experiments and cover some other variables. But regardless, the research out there shows in other studies that people who spend a lot of time on social media, in fact, based on the number of apps that they use, if they have 7 or more apps, they're 3 times more likely to be clinically depressed than people using less than 3 apps.
Water seems to follow the path of least resistance. Could the same be said for people? And by that I mean, is it a situation where social media allows you to be easier in being involved, so to speak, in social media, although it's not a one-on-one situation, so we fall into the trap that we are being more social when we're not?
Exactly, and it's kind of like I use the analogy of drinking regular sodas. You know, you get all that sugar but no nutrition. And we know with, for example, Facebook, when somebody likes a post you make, we know that you get an endorphin rush, but it's an empty endorphin rush. That friend, quote-unquote, is more like somebody who just has kind of the same interests you do, and they're not vested in you as a person. And if you're sick, they're not going to come over and make you chicken soup.
Now, in reading a story on this study, it tried to give some ideas as to what you can do, especially, I guess, if you're a parent of a teenager or a child, and you sense that there might be some sort of problem. And it just seems to me that the examples they give are easier said than done. For instance, if your child seems to be sad, withdrawn, and continually in a bad mood, ask them to stay off Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or whatever other platforms they use for a couple of days. Now, just generally speaking, in most cases, teenagers are at an age where they're not always listening to what their parents want them to do. And I think back to when I was a kid, you know, go outside and play more rather than sitting in front of the television. I would look at my parents as being, well, I like doing this. You're the one who's wrong. I'm not.
And there is reinforcement for doing Facebook and social media. It is difficult. It is a lot more difficult to do it than to say it. And I know what we have to do with my kids. And, you know, when they first started getting on, they didn't have phones, and it was always on their computers. And we controlled their time. For example, over summer break, we would go in every night and change their password into a 12- or 13-digit number, and then we would create a series of math problems that they had to solve and then put those solutions back-to-back to get the digits every morning. So they'd have to get up in the morning and do math before they could ever get on their computer.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
And that was great. You know, now what we do, though, they have their tablets and their cell phones and everything else, and we've got it set up so that they can only access, you know, internet data through the Wi-Fi in our house. And we have, through our Wi-Fi, we've gone in there, and there's some parental controls in there, and we can set up time limits. You know, they can't get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and start surfing the internet because my Wi-Fi will not allow them access to the internet. Mm.
But going back to, again, just the issue of if you notice social media depression, how do you define it? I'm talking this from a parent's perspective. How do you define it differently from, you know, just a normal period of time when a teenager may or may not be sullen?
Well, again, The problem with all of that is, you know, should we maybe not get our teenagers who are sullen and being a typical teenager, should we not introduce them to somebody who may be able to help them through that? Because, you know, their worst enemy is the parent, even though they're their best friend. They just don't understand that at that point. So having a stranger who's vested in helping them is oftentimes very beneficial to a child going through those teenage years. Period. So I recommend we do that. In fact, my kids bring me their friends and say, can you talk to their parents because this is going on with this guy?
Right.
And I have great kids. I'm lucky. I'm blessed. But I think that's a little insight into that our kids do want to talk to somebody. They just don't want it to be a teacher or a parent because those are authority figures over them.
Okay, gotcha. Now, as a mental health care professional, do you believe that frequent social media usage is typically there to fill a void?
I think it does fill a void for a lot of people. For people like yourself and me, we use it a lot for our business because we're out there in the media, and we're not the typical users, so to speak. But for example, my patients in the hospital, that fills a major void for them. When they're in the hospital for weeks on end, they can stay in touch with all their friends. They know what's going on at their work. It does fill a major void for them. When somebody's doing it to avoid actual interaction is when it becomes problematic.
Is there a problem with either, and when I'm talking about now social media in specific, talking and dealing with other people, is there a problem with the growing negativity that is out there in affecting one's own personal psyche when it comes to what they ingest in social media? And conversely, there are people who seem to want to be very, very happy all the time, at least what they put out there on social media, which might not be true. And also, the other side of the coin, there are some people who are very dour on social media, which can be a bit of a downer as well.
Well, and we're having a lot of new problems that are popping up. For example, you know, last week we had the Facebook killer who did Facebook Live, and he actually created kind of a new form of domestic violence by, okay, I can't get to my ex because she's cut me off and she's moved out, so I'm going to kill this person and blame it all on her. And he had the victim say the name several times of this woman, and he said, she's the reason why you're dying, and then he proceeded to execute the man. Before that, we've had on Facebook Live and other things like Snapchat, people who have posted and in a live setting shown their own suicide. And before that, we had, you know, the Chicago where they took the teenager with cognitive deficiencies and they tortured and beat him. It's kind of an evolution that's happening. And at the same time, I don't want to take away our freedom of speech, but freedom of speech is not free. It has a cost, and we have to be aware, especially as parents, what our kids are getting into.
Do you think that maybe, and in some of the cases you just described, such as the Facebook killer and other incidents, do you think one of the problems is that people aren't aware of the finality of their actions and that what they're doing online or in social media is somewhat of a show that comes today and goes tomorrow and life goes on?
Well, that's very much how it feels and appears. I mean, you don't see the anguish. And again, you said it earlier, you know, people paint this pretty picture of their life where they can do just the opposite, but you don't see the troubles they're having at, you know, and with their families, with their jobs, with their school. You only see this beautiful world that they're presenting. And before we had to worry about TV and magazines, and now it's, you take it with you, this, I have to compete against this. I have to be, for lack of a better term, Twiggy, the model from the 70s. I have to look like that. And we're creating this constant comparison to an artificial world that's not real.
Are we putting too much of ourselves on social media? For instance, in your case, you're a therapist. You have children who are on social media. The image that they depict, your children, on social media, is it an accurate depiction of them? Are they guardians in some ways, or is it a depiction of who they'd like to be?
Well, one of the things that I do with my kids is any social media they're on, when they're posting anything, I get it. I see it right then. It comes up on my, and I've actually joined these social media apps that, you know, don't really have any interest for me. And so I see what they're portraying out there as themselves. And right now, you know, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and her thing is makeup and nails, and she's showing everybody every makeup and nail trick she's ever learned. And I think she's being relatively honest with everything else. My son, on the other hand, he's that adolescent boy who wants to keep everything secret. So he's more about watching what other people post, and he doesn't really post very much. He doesn't throw himself out there for ridicule. So, you know, I've got two different personalities I'm dealing with. And at this point, I think, you know, my daughter's being relatively honest with everything because she posts her mistakes when she doesn't do her makeup right, you know, and yeah, she lets the world know, and she laughs at it. She thinks it's funny. And of course, she's 12 right now. Wait till she's 15 or 16, and I'm sure my world will be different.
Do you think that boys and girls generally treat how they use social media differently?
Anecdotally, with my children, I can say yes. But again, I think that may be more to do with where they're at developmentally, age-wise, just from observations. Watching, you know, we volunteer at our kids' schools all the time. Watching the other students, there is a difference in how the female students post things on social media versus the male students. And, you know, you talked about, are they being honest? Are they being, you know, truthful? I'm in some cases, I've been amazed at how honest some of the high school kids are. But in other cases, and probably a majority of them, I see them posting what they want the world to see and think of them. So it's kind of like this is not the me generation of the 80s. It's more like, what do you think of me generation?
So bottom line, especially if you're the parent of a social media user, basically watch what your kids do and see if there's any indicators that could lead to depression, correct?
Definitely. And I think the key to that is communication. You know, are there times during the day when, you know, the social media is turned off, the computer's turned off, the tablets are turned off? And I go back to the old adage, sit down and have dinner with your kids. And don't just turn your phone upside down on the table, turn them off. Be a good role model for them and be present for your children. And they'll continue to come to you when they have issues.
Always good advice. Dr. John Huber, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you so much. Anytime. I love your show.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check on the show number for this program, which is show number 0402, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The Bayonne Bridge connects New Jersey with Staten Island, and it spans one of the busiest shipping channels in the country. The road sits 151 feet above the water, which was fine until recently. You see, the Panama Canal was widened to allow larger ships, and the new ships wouldn't fit below the bridge. To solve this problem, an ingenious plan was developed to raise the existing road higher inside the bridge's arch. It would accommodate the bigger ships, save nearly $3 billion, and have virtually no environmental impact by using the same foundations as the existing bridge. Despite that, the project got bogged down in red tape. The mandatory environmental review filled 20,000 pages and still wasn't able to thwart a lawsuit by an environmental group. Let's be fair, all these delays mean that the bridge won't be completed until 10 years after planning began, the same amount of time that it took the U.S. to complete the entire Panama Canal 100 years ago. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll share the history of lickable adhesive stamps. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. But I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, police in Cleveland are trying to identify a woman they say pulled a gun on a barber because he was taking too long to cut her 7-year-old son's hair. A police report says the woman threatened the barber at a barber school on April the 14th. Police say the woman complained several times before pulling a handgun from her purse and pointing it at the barber, telling him, "I got two clips. I'll pop you." The police say the woman put the gun back after another employee came over to calm her down. The barber was able to finish the haircut, and the woman left with her two children afterward. WJWTV reports surveillance video captured images of the woman, and authorities are asking for help in identifying her. You know, normally, that's not the kind of clips you want in a barbershop. Also, I am just a tad concerned about the life lessons her two children are receiving under her tutelage. Not exactly Mom of the Year material, I would say. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Ernie Smith, the man behind the website and newsletter known as Tedium, which is subtitled The Dull Side of the Internet, is back on the program. He's here to talk about a recent newsletter that took a look at the history of lickable adhesive stamps. Ernie joins us on the line via Skype from Virginia. Hi, Ernie.
Hey, how's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks once again for being on the program. I know I ask this every time you're on, but I'm just curious about the process once again as to where you come up with an idea like talking about the history of lickable stamps.
I think a lot of times it actually comes down to just being observant in your day-to-day. Recently I had to mail a gift to somebody, and in that process I had to go get a gift card, I had to sign it, and I had to put the envelope in. And in the process of actually doing this, I ended up licking the envelope, which I hadn't done in a while, and it like got me thinking, like, why is this still a thing? Why are we still doing this? And from there, clearly, I decided I need to research why envelopes and why the mail system is so addicted to us licking things.
Okay, so before we go back to the beginning as to how this started, let's start at the end and answer that question that you just posed, which is, why are we still licking envelopes?
Basically, it's very useful in industrial settings. Like direct mail is particularly enamored with the concept of licking. And basically, it's because they, you know, like, they don't have like armies of people in factories somewhere just licking envelopes repeatedly. No, they actually have machines do it through like more automated processes, and as a result, like, it's a technology that's never really gone away. And if you actually look online, there are a couple of services out there that make it so that you could do like handwritten cards with perfectly done up envelopes and stuff. And I think that it just shows how perfectly the system works at an industrial level.
Okay, know? So beyond the industrial level, I mean, that's a part of the situation, but the general population, how come the, for lack of a better term, the peel and stick has not taken off the way one might expect it to over a period of time?
You know, I think when it comes down to it, you know, people are just going to go with the cheapest thing. There was a really great episode of Seinfeld, which I referenced in there, in which George's fiance Susan ends up dying, like, because she's licking the wedding invitations, and they went with the cheapest possible envelope. I have to imagine that most people are kind of like that.
Hmm. Okay, so again, let's go back to the beginning. What did you learn when you delved into the history of lickable adhesive stamps and envelopes?
I think the big thing that I learned was that it was actually a pretty big innovation for its time. Before we had lickable envelopes and lickable stamps, it was kind of a pain to deliver mail because there was no postage attached, and as a result, like, it made the process way more complicated than it was. There's a man named Roland Hill who was trying to come up with ways to improve the British mail system. And he wrote a document about it in which he kind of broke down a few things. And one of the things that he discussed was the idea of creating adhesive stamps that are attached to the envelopes. And the reason why this was actually quite a good idea is because you could actually prove by having this stamp there that the postage had already been paid, which made it so that a lot of the complications that came later in the process were taken away from it. And the first popular stamp that actually did this, it was called the Penny Black Stamp.
And what year or what time period are we talking about here?
We're talking about the 1830s. Okay. 1840s. Rowland Hill put out his document in 1837, and the Penny Black Stamp came out just a couple years later. And basically, it proved hugely popular. Within the first year alone of this stamp being released out into the wild, 68 million of them had been used, just in the UK, and just stamps. That's kind of a lot.
Wow, that is a lot. So flash forward, the stamp is one thing. What about the envelope?
I would say that in the case of the envelope, a big element of it has been that it's always been sort of a it's always been sort of a useful tool to have in terms of mailing things. And I think that one of the interesting elements of it that I kind of cover in this is that the adhesive has at times been imperfect. There's an actual example there. You know, I guess a good way to put it is that there's a real life Susan, you know, somebody who actually died from licking an envelope. It actually happened in 1895. The guy's name is Sigmund Fetchheimer. He licked an envelope. He got a paper cut on his tongue, and this tongue cut eventually led to blood poisoning, and the guy ended up dying, which is, you know, kind of an unusual way to die, and the papers of the era actually, you know, covered it somewhat heavily. I think from there, you know, obviously adhesives improved, and there were a lot of elements that were used to kind of better the adhesives. So nowadays, if you're looking at an envelope, you know, it's going to be gluten free. It's going to be vegan. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to be like a, you know, it's going to be mostly a synthetic process, but it's still, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, a couple of people had to die just to, you know, get the right adhesive there.
Now, you have on your website a lot of details about this, including one of the things you just delved on a little bit, and I won't go into it because I'll get people to go to your website and see more. You list five interesting misconceptions about adhesives on letters, right? And one of the things you just mentioned, the idea of it being gluten-free?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, I think that, like, it's been one of those things where people are just, you know, are just concerned, like, that they may accidentally have some gluten somewhere, and so if you delve online enough, you'll find people complaining, oh, there's gluten in these envelopes, you shouldn't lick them, you know, to the point where the Envelope Manufacturers Association literally had to put something in its FAQ on its website just to tell people, no, there's not actually gluten in the envelopes.
Fascinating stuff, as always. People can go to your website, which is tedium.co, and read up everything they ever wanted to know about adhesive stamps and envelopes. The particular article is entitled Lickety Split. You can find that and other rather interesting articles. By the way, going to your website is, I have to admit, like going down a rabbit hole. because you start reading something and you go, oh, let me look at this. And then, oh, let me look at this. And then you realize your day is gone. So I warn people about that right now. Ernie, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Ernie Smith, writer of the website and newsletter Tedium. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0402, and you'll find links to Ernie's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police say an Ohio man called 911 to request a police dog to help track down heroin allegedly stolen from him. 20-year-old Joseph Murphy of Bath Township near Akron made the call in January. The recording was released only this week. When the call operator asked why the caller needed a police dog, he replies that a female stole heroin from him. Oh, don't take my word for it. Listen to the call for yourself.
911, what is the address of the emergency?
They need a police dog.
You did what?
They need a police dog.
You need a police dog? What's going on there?
She stole heroin from me.
Yes. Bath Police Chief Mike McNeely says it's among the most bizarre things he's heard in four decades of policing. McNeely says the man is expected to face a drug charge after he pulled a brown, waxy substance from his pants while being interviewed by police. The substance was seized and sent to a lab for testing. By the way, Joseph Murphy is not unfamiliar to law enforcement. On April 16th, Murphy was arrested for OVI after crashing a Mercedes CLK. Police said his blood alcohol at the time, his level was 0.121. Yikes. Murphy also made national headlines on New Year's Day, accused of urinating on a Florida trooper's leg during a disorderly conduct arrest on a Disney property. So, why? Oh, why? Would you call 911 to request a police dog to find your stolen heroin? And going back to New Year's Day, why would you pee on a police officer? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0402. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0402. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on Patreon, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were listening to this at the same time as watching The Wizard of Oz and listening to Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon, well, it's a waste of electricity. There are some things you just can't multitask.